Hey, it's me, Lars Larson. Thanks for checking out my podcast, and be sure to tell a friend about the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. And no, we're not at Hoover this week. That's going to happen a couple of weeks from now when we go down to Stanford and do a week of broadcast. But that's all right. It is the Lars Larson Show. And we are live on the Radio Northwest Network from our regular studios inside Havana on the Willamette, which is, of course, Portland, Oregon. But we broadcast out to every corner of the Pacific Northwest. And I'm glad to have you become part of the conversation at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I want to start with something that a lot of us have been suggesting for a long, long time. I can actually count back maybe 21 years ago that I first made this suggestion and I first heard this suggestion. And now it sounds as though after decades of asking for it, somebody has finally arrived who would actually do this.
So we are preparing for the military to secure our border between Mexico and the United States. We have a meeting on it in a little while with General Mattis and everybody, and I think that it's something we have to do. Now, the caravan, which is over 1,000 people coming in from Honduras, thought they were going to just walk right through Mexico and right through the border.
And, of course, that isn't going to happen. That was President Donald Trump less than 2 hours ago saying we will put the military on our border, which is, of course, one of the jobs of the United States military to guard the border of this country. And secondly, the president mentioned the caravan. Now, if you've been reading the news reports and watching what's going on, there is a gigantic caravan of somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 people. They are coming up from Central America through Mexico. Now, Mexico has a southern border that they guard very fiercely when they want to. And when they don't want to, they let people flow through it. They could do the same thing with their northern border. Mexico could actually cooperate with the United States. But if you noticed, Mexico is not exactly in a cooperating mode right now. So the president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, is going to have to take the bull by the horns and actually make sure this gets done. And of course, the president has not been able to get the kind of cooperation from the United States Congress that he would like to have had. He promised all the way through that election. His signature issue was, we are going to build a wall between Mexico and the United States. It will have the, well, it'll have the positive effect of, one, you don't come into our country unless you come in legally. If you come in legally, you're perfectly welcome to be here as a visitor, as a student, as a business person, or as somebody who aspires someday to become an American citizen. We let more than 1 million people a year come in as refugees, people seeking asylum, seeking citizenship, or just people seeking a green card so they can work here. But we do not tolerate, or not now, are going to tolerate people who will come into our country illegally. And for the longest time, I've suggested, why don't we do this? If being in the National Guard, and there are about 600,000 or 700,000 Americans who are in the National Guard, they signed up for 1 weekend a month, famously, and 2 weeks a year. And during the 2 weeks a year, they typically get their training. What better training than to put them on that southern border and say, your job is to make sure nobody comes across this line. You could deploy them in different places, the places where the fences are not in as good a shape, because we do have some fence, we do have some wall. And of course, the Congress has said to the president, we are not going to give you the money to build those wall prototypes that all those private American companies have prepared. They gave him just $1.6 billion, is mostly for repair and refurbishment, maybe 100 miles of new wall. Now, I know that there are people who say they don't like walls. Nancy Pelosi does not like walls, but she lives behind one in San Francisco because she's a multimillionaire and a Democrat congresswoman. Charlie Schumer lives behind locked doors and armed security and walls. And so do all the other folks who are advocating against this. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, he doesn't like walls. This is the Joker. And by the way, we'll be in his neighborhood in a couple of weeks when we take the show road on the show, a show on the road down to Stanford. We're right in his neighborhood of Palo Alto. What did he do? Zuckerberg doesn't like walls, at least one on the country. He bought a really nice house in a place where an average house costs over $1 million. A nice house, just a beginner nice house, is $3 to $10 million. He bought one that was more expensive than that, but that wasn't good enough for Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg bought the 4 or 5 houses around that house because he wanted a DMZ. So the same guy who advocates publicly against having a wall for this country to serve the rest of us who are not worth billions of dollars goes out and buys a nice house in a nice neighborhood and then buys the five houses around him so that he can have even more insulation from the folks around him. Mark Zuckerberg personally believes in walls, and most of the celebrities that you hear arguing against this believe in walls. But they're the folks who, you know, they advocate getting into Congress, into the Senate, and the House of Representatives. Those folks officially don't like walls, except at their own house. Well, now the president has said, if you won't give me a wall, I'll do the next best thing. I will put the military on the border, and we will make sure that people do not come up and announce to America, there are 1,500 of us, and we're going to cross into your country, and you can't stop us. That ain't going to happen. So welcome to the program. We've got a lot to talk about today. Our Twitter poll, should cities hamstring Uber and Lyft to keep the cab companies alive? Seattle is doing this right now, and I think it's dead wrong. If you can't compete in America's competitive environment, if you're the Toys R Us and Amazon is eating your lunch, too bad. Either figure out how to compete or get out of the way. Now, this is what Seattle is proposing, that they want to raise the cost of all the Uber rides with a base fare, like the cab companies charge. In other words, the very same kind of mechanism. I've got nothing against the cab companies, but if somebody comes along with a better way to get around a town, and the cab companies can't figure out how to adjust to that new competition, you know what happens to companies who do not adjust to new competition. So our Twitter poll, should cities hamstring Uber and Lyft to help keep the cab companies alive? It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Service. If you rely on trucks for your business, keep your biggest assets on the road and running right online at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now you can jump into the conversation. And as you know, I'm glad to talk to naysayers. Just bring your wits and a few facts, a little bit of logic, and the willingness to answer a few questions from yours truly. It is honestly provocative talk radio on the Radio Northwest Network throughout the Pacific Northwest. 866-439-5277. Remember, it is 866-HEY-LARS, and we always start with some nonsense.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold, hard facts from Lars.
5 years ago, Multnomah County commissioners passed a law that requires safe storage of guns. Failure is punishable by 10 days in jail and a fine. Now, I safely store all my firearms, and I imagine most of you do as well, so the rule really doesn't affect us. But the county commissioners believe passing another rule would change things like violence. They vowed to punish any adult who didn't lock up his guns. And then, 1 year later, 15-year-old Jared Padgett killed two fellow students at Reynolds High School. The gun he used was owned by his big brother, who had a locked box and was an adult, but the key was on his key ring, usually dropped on the counter in the kitchen. Now, you'd think the DA would want to use this shiny new law on safe storage, especially when the DA admitted we were never able to establish exactly how Jared Padgett had access to the gun. Nope. No charges whatsoever. Now there's a ballot measure that proposes the very same rule, except this time statewide. It may get the votes and give folks a warm and fuzzy feeling, but those rules only work if you enforce them. And the evidence seems clear that Oregon authorities lack the guts to actually enforce the crazy rules they pass.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, granite, topsoil, or sand. Let Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks put it where you want it.
Well, I've never given the Daily Grill to America's former anchorman, Dan Rather, who's a little bit on the crazy side, but apparently freaked out yesterday. There's this controversy involving a major broadcaster. Some of our stations are owned by that, but it's called Sinclair Broadcasting, and frankly, I don't have a problem with what they're doing. What Sinclair has said is that they are going to have a particular editorial side that goes with their newscast, and no different than any most other radio and TV stations, but rather went crazy and said, let's be clear, news anchors looking into the camera and reading a script handed down by a corporate overload, a script meant to obscure the truth and not elucidate it. It's not journalism. It's propaganda. It's Orwellian. Dan's a little off his feed right now, and he's also wrong about all this, but I thought I'd give him the grill today. Today's best email that you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com comes in from Truman. Lars, a lot of people commute from Oregon to Washington and back every day for work. We pay taxes in all forms just to earn a living, and the money grabbers can never get enough. There are people who have never earned a paycheck with Oregon taxes removed and may not understand it's a big hit to our pockets. We only recover a small percentage at the end of the year. They want to adopt the pay to drive so that people who are already taxed without having any say-so on how the funds are spent. In my opinion, if you're paying taxes from your income, you should have a choice on how it's used. People should stop trying to reinvent the wheel and maybe just pump it up to operating pressures instead. Thanks for keeping my mind awake. Signed, Truman. Back in just a moment. Glad to have you with me. It's the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We call this the War on the Car. A Seattle City Council draft resolution proposes setting a base fare for transportation networking companies. Now, when you hear a bureaucratic phrase like that, you say, what exactly does that mean? Here's what it means. Uber and Lyft, two rideshare companies, I've got no dog in the fight there other than using them occasionally, but not using them for free. I'm just a paying customer like everyone else. They have come into the marketplace of almost every major American city, and they have competed very well. They offer a good service at a good price, and the cab companies are taking it hard because they have not figured out yet how to compete. And so the cab companies charge a lot more. And in fact, in Washington, D.C., which is where I end up using Uber the most, we fly back there. I've taken cabs occasionally and Uber for the same, you know, A to B transition, is twice as expensive to use a cab. Now, Seattle, the difference may not be that much, but clearly it is putting a dent in the pocketbooks of the cab drivers. And I've got nothing against the cab drivers, but if you're offering a service and someone else offers the same or better service at a substantially lower price, you know who's going to win that one. So now, the folks on the city council who always talk about how we're looking out for the little guy, we want to make sure that the consumer gets protected, they're looking out for the best interest of about 700 cab drivers in a metro area of 2 million. And who's going to pay the excess for making the cab drivers better off? Why, the 2 million people. Now, the city of Seattle's actual city population is not that big. But can you imagine if I get, when we get, we've had her on before, but Shama Sawant, the full-on socialist who's part of the Seattle City Council, I want to get her on and say, how is it reasonable to create a rule that works against the best interests of hundreds of thousands of consumers to benefit 700 people who have had a monopoly on transportation in the form of cabs until Uber and Lyft came along? I want to ask Shama Sawant about that, and I'm willing to bet her answer is not going to make sense. Let's go to Craig, who's calling in from Kent, listening on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Craig, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to mention a specific point. It's kind of a general situation. The government's built all sorts of regulations and restraints on business operators like cab companies, mm-hmm. and like construction companies and so on. And then when somebody goes outside of those regulations and constraints, of course they can do better financially than people who are stuck with all those shackles.
Well, hold on a second. I want you to tell me this. The cab companies have to be insured, so does Uber and Lyft. The cab companies have to background check drivers, so does Uber and Lyft. The cab companies, virtually everything that's required of the cab companies is also required of Uber and Lyft. Where is it you see Uber and Lyft going outside the shackles, as you called them?
My understanding is that cab companies are required to follow a certain rate structure.
Well,
it was instituted, I suspect, to protect the cab companies as opposed to the public.
It was.
But they still have those rate structures required.
But it benefits them.
I understand. What I'm saying is they still have those constraints. It was meant to benefit.
They don't have to have them. The cab companies wanted those because what it said was that a cab had to charge the rate set by the city, which meant nobody else could walk in. It would be like if Fred Meyer went to the city council and said, apples can never be sold under $1.50 a pound. And then Fred Meyer sold apples at $1.50, $1.75, $2 a pound, depending on the grade of apple. Somebody comes in and says, why, I can go to Yakima and I can buy apples and bring them in. I'll sell them for 75 cents a pound. And and Fred Meyer says, no, you can't. The city council has a law against selling apples at 75 cents. And the guy says, I've got perfectly good apples. I'm willing to sell them for 75 cents. And you're telling me I have to charge $1.50? Who does that benefit? And the answer would be it benefits Fred Meyer, whoever it was that asked for the rule. The cab companies wanted that structure because what they wanted the city to say was no.
You're missing something here,
okay,
too.
Okay, what am I missing?
They did want that. It was for the cab companies and for the government, in part because if I'm in a strange city, and I've been there on occasion, I can get taken advantage of very thoroughly by a cab driver. And if somebody's not looking over their shoulder, they can do that. So there is a reason for it. I'm not saying it's
Well, they can still take advantage of you, and you should know that. If you're smart, you should know that even with that structure, if they say, I think it's $2.70 a mile is the rate set by the city. So the cab driver who knows, this guy's from out of town, he doesn't know I can get to this location in about 2 miles. I'll take him on the five-mile trip. He's going to get $2.70 a mile for 5 miles. The rate structure doesn't do a damn thing to protect you from a cab driver who wants to, you know, illicitly take advantage of you. In fact, it benefits him because you can say, well, heck, we only moved a mile or so. How are you charging me $15? And the cab driver says $2.70 a mile. The city sets the rate.
If I may, the main point, I can't defend that particular policy one way or the other. I don't see it's necessary. The main point is they are stuck with those shackles for now. Until the shackles are taken off.
All they have to do is go to the city council and ask them
with Uber or
any
Lyft.
Cab company.
Same thing, if I may, happens with construction companies.
Craig, hold up.
You see all those guys at Home Depot.
Craig doesn't want to listen, so maybe he doesn't want to. Craig, all the cab company has to do is roll into City Hall and say, by the way, we don't want to have set rates anymore. We want to be able to charge any rates we want. But the cab companies had a monopoly, a regulated monopoly where there were 700 cabs 30 years ago and there are 700 cabs in Seattle right now. This was a real gold mine for them, and now their gold mine has been closed up, and I think it should stay closed. And you've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. Before I get to your calls, and you're certainly welcome to join the conversation on the Radio Northwest Network at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Someone sent me last night a link to a story. Yesterday, the governor of Oregon, and I'm sure Jay Inslee's no different on this, but the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, was out talking up the prospects of this brand new affordable housing. Now, I think affordable housing is one of those terms that you should immediately make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. You ought to be very suspicious every time you hear a politician talk about affordable housing. And here's why. We have talked on this show to a guy named Rob Justice, and there are a bunch of other contractors just like him who build housing that is not subsidized. It may be affordable, but it's not subsidized by the government. So he's not working under all the limitations that come with all those subsidies. Now, if you think, well, subsidized housing, that has to be less expensive, right? No, subsidized housing usually costs about twice as much. I know that that belies common sense. How can it be if it's subsidized by somebody? Somebody else's, if your granddad came to you when you were 16 and said, young man, I want you to have an automobile to drive around in. And I will pay half the cost if you will go out and work and earn the other half. That's the kind of deal that a lot of moms and a lot of dads and grandmas and granddads have made in their family. They don't want to just give the car to the kid because they know what happens when you just get something given to you. You don't necessarily take good care of it. You don't value it because you got no skin in the game. So granddad says, I'll pay for half. You pay for half. That doesn't make the car more expensive overall. You're still buying the same car. And the kid is paying half the cost of the car. It actually makes it less expensive from his perspective. So say it's a $4,000 used car, and he's paying $2,000, and granddad's paying $2,000. That's a subsidized car. That's the way you see it in the private sector. Here's how it works in the government. The government pumps in your tax money into a project, and it makes the project more expensive. Let me give you a simple illustration. This is the thing that Kate Brown was so excited about. An 87-unit housing complex reopened Monday in North Salem following major renovations, a move aimed at preserving affordable housing options for low-income residents. The apartments will house a handful of formerly homeless people enrolled in a program that helps them pay the rent. So not only is it affordable housing, but somebody's going to help them pay the rent. It's called Fairhaven Gardens, formerly Viking Village. They bought it from a private sector company for just shy of $4 million for 87 units. Probably not a bad price, but then, here's the way they put it, so it sounds like motherhood and apple pie. Now that we have the property, it's going to be permanently affordable thanks to $17 million in public and private investment. Community Development Partners was able to reinvigorate the Fairhaven complex. And I know some of you are doing the thing I do when I hear a number like that. 87 units into 17 million. And this is not to build brand new. This is to take a 50-year-old housing complex. It's 50 years old. I'm willing to bet, I don't know this for a fact, but let me speculate. It is probably 2x4 construction built in 1969. I'm willing to bet it probably isn't 2x6. Now, that makes a difference, too, at least to me. I look at a 2x4 wall and I say, I don't think that's as good. It can't be as well insulated or anything else. But it will get, or has already got, fresh flooring, doors, windows, bathrooms, kitchens, exteriors, and a one-acre community garden. It works out to just shy of $200,000 a unit. You say, well, I don't know what apartment units cost. Well, I do, because I call the people like Rob Justice who build these things. He just finished a project last year. We had him on to talk about it. And again, I got no dog in the fight there. He's not my brother-in-law or anything like that. He's just a guy I contacted because I wanted to illustrate what does it actually cost to build apartment units. Well, he builds complexes on land that he buys on the private marketplace, labor that he hires in the private marketplace, and materials that he buys from private vendors. $95,000 a unit is what he builds housing for. Brand spanking new to current codes. 95. And what do you get for that? Some of them, most of them, are two bedrooms. A certain number, smaller number, are one bedrooms. And some are studios, a very small number of studios, because those don't fit everyone's needs. Most people need a couple of bedrooms. So he builds these for $95,000 per. They just took a $4 million complex. Let's not even count that money in the average. And poured $200,000 a unit into rehabbing something that's 50 years old to come up with affordable housing. And then having poured all that public money into refurbing it, you have to subsidize the rent of the people who live there. Now, who exactly thinks that's affordable? Kate Brown does, and she's running for re-election. You can send her a message this November. Certain other people who make their money from this think that's affordable. I don't think it's affordable. It sounds to me like a terrifically bad job or bad deal for the taxpayer. But they will have poured all of this in. What do they end up with? 9 studios, 51 bedrooms, and 24 2-bedrooms and 4 and 3-bedroom apartments. A property manager will live in one of them. The average cost, $199,570 per unit, not counting the original $4 million that they put in to buy the 87 units to begin with. Now, that's what they call affordable housing. If you'd gone to Rob Justice with the same amount of money, instead of spending $200,000 per unit, you could have spent less than $100,000 a unit and got brand spanking new housing units. You could have let the former owners of Fairhaven Gardens, then called Viking Village, continue to run their housing. But if you built your brand new complex next door out of the private sector, you'd have been renting brand new apartments for a whole lot less. When you talk to Rob Justice, and again, this he's just a good example. I'm sure there are other folks out there who do the same thing he does. I mean, it's a private marketplace. Although, when the government goes out and starts shoveling out amounts of cash like this, what do you think almost everybody in the business does? Hey, everybody, the government is giving away free money. We can go down and we can build apartment units at twice what they actually cost to build, and we're going to make a few bucks on it. Now, I don't mind people making money. But I would think you'd be almost embarrassed if you said, I'm going to take existing housing, just merely refurbish it, and I'm going to charge the city twice as much as you could build the stuff brand new for. Somebody tell me that you believe that is actually affordable housing. And even when you're done with all that, you have to subsidize the rents. Let's go to Dan in Linwood, Washington. Dan, thanks for listening on KVI. What's on your mind today?
I was calling about the caravan. My question is, they announced that they were going to send troops to the border to secure the border. Yeah. What's going to happen in California if they try to send troops into California with it being a quote-unquote sanctuary state?
I don't think that California has any legal ability to stop the United States federal government from sending troops to the border. Now, do I think they might try? Sure. Do I think there might be protests by private citizens? That'll probably happen too. But, you know, the authority is pretty clear. The United States federal government is charged with maintaining the national security of this country. If you send a bunch of troops to the California border, the New Mexico border, the Texas border, Arizona border, and say, we're going to secure the border and make sure nobody comes across, California will probably gripe up a storm. But I don't think they can actually do anything meaningful. Do you?
I hope not. But also my question is, what amount of force will they be able to deploy to try to keep them from crossing the border without the left wing just going absolutely nuts?
The left will go nuts no matter what. I mean, look, they start nuts. So they're already you're talking about a trip that is not a long trip for them. They're already right on the border of nuts. So the trip is a couple of footsteps from them to nuts. And soup to nuts. I mean, they're nuts already. But what level of force? Here's what you do. You tell a bunch of the military, and again, I'm not a military commander. I don't have that military experience. But you say, you guys, go out and make a line here. Nobody comes across. So anybody who comes across, the military that you've deployed says, you can't cross here. And you turn them around. Now, do you say, are you going to shoot them? Only if they threaten the lives of those people, and there are armed people who cross that border. We know that the drug dealers are armed, and they cross the border from time to time. So if somebody shoots at our guys, I'm all in favor of them shooting back. If nobody is shooting at them, I think the military is perfectly capable of setting up a line and making sure that nobody gets across it. Does that seem like a sensible answer?
It does, and what I was reading today was that if they cross the border as a family unit, that they... Well, that we have to let them in. Is that true?
I don't think so. Not if they're not crossing legally. We don't have to let anybody come into this country. We choose to let a certain number of people come in, but you don't get any special, you know, pass because you've come across illegally. If you have a legitimate reason for crossing, go to one of the legitimate crossings at McAllen, Texas, or San Ysidro, or wherever you want to go, and come in legally. If you're not coming in legally, I don't think you should be allowed to come in at all. But that's my answer. Dan, thanks for the call from Linwood. Back in just a moment. Glad to be with you and glad to take your calls at 866-439-5277. When we come back, boy, has Seattle put itself in a box by trying to build 18th century transportation technology. And now they're $23 million over budget. And they've decided to shut it down, if they can. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Would I like people to be able to afford the housing they want to live in? Absolutely, I'd like it. Do I think that the government getting involved is going to make it cheaper? Not when I look at examples like this. The Seattle City Council has been here before. This is from Crosscut. They've been building this little streetcar. You know, Portland made the same mistake. I think the Portland streetcar came in $50 million over budget. Well, here's Seattle trying to do the same thing. We're going to have a modern city with 18th century technology for transportation. In other words, a streetcar. Now, they're cute and they're picturesque, and tourists may want to take their pictures in front of them. This project is now $23 million over budget. And Mayor Jenny Durkan says there are no good options. We don't have the money, so we got to shut it down. And then her advisors say, well, if you shut down the construction project for 6 months, it's going to increase the price by $13 million for some reason if you pick it up 6 months later. And as Crosscut points out, broadly, the streetcar problem, I love the way they wrote this, even though they're a bunch of lefties, fits into the pattern of city council members learning about significant cost bumps later than they'd like. See, I would have framed it as clueless city council members who all of a sudden wake up someday and say, we're $23 million over budget. How did that happen? You weren't paying attention is how it happened. Crosscut points out between 2015 and 2016, there was the seawall. $70 million over cost. Seattle City Light's new billing system. Computers. Denver, have the government buy your computers. $40 million over budget. The North Precinct Police Station, which wasn't over budget. That wasn't the problem. They just kept adding on things like a Christmas tree. They kept hanging ornaments on it. When they got done, it was $60 million more than originally budgeted for. This is what government does. A, they don't pay attention. B, it's not their money, so they don't have to care too much about it. Can you imagine what happens out at Amazon if you go to Bezos and Bezos said, we need a new building. What's that going to cost? And you say, about $100 million, boss. And then when that same person has to walk in 6 months later and say, by the way, boss, remember that building I said we could build for $100 million? It's going to be $150 million instead. Do you think that guy gets to keep his job? Because I'm thinking the boss, unless you've got a really good explanation, he is not going to let you keep your job. But guess what? At the city government and the county government and the state government, every bozo who makes a mistake like this, even the bozos who make mistakes that cost people and children especially their lives, they all get to keep their jobs. If we applied the same private sector logic, you did what? You're fired. And if everybody knows that's the set of rules, they don't make those mistakes very often. Let's go to Tom in Madras. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Yeah, me, Lars. Hey, I'm a licensed plumber and I do service work. And about the whole affordable housing, who's going to pay for the maintenance once all these places are built and these people are in there?
You and me?
We all know that nobody that gets anything for nothing is going to take care of it, especially if they don't have to pay the rent on it.
That has been the truth. And in fact, most people, when you mention public housing, unless it's brand spanking new, you immediately think that's going to run down real fast. Whereas somebody who actually has a dog in the fight, they tend to treat things a little bit differently. Tom, very good. And by the way, since we've been talking about transportation and high costs and all that, I can't resist our favorite little song that goes with that. You know, it goes with TriMet and Max and a Seattle streetcar, all these crazy projects they launch into.
Riders on the Max. Hit a Honda on the tracks. It shut it down for days. You'll have to find another way. If it's too hot or too cold, you're never getting home. Riders on the Max. There's a drunk bum on the floor. His beer is pouring out the door. There's no room for a seat. It smells like stinky feet. If you wanna take a ride, you won't believe your eyes. Riders on the Max.
You know how that works out. You get public transit. And boy, if you have to try to get somebody to ride that thing, everybody's thinking, I don't want to share my ride with people who are like this. Ever get in a stinky Uber car? Don't think so. How about a stinky Lyft? Even these days, now that they've got new competition, the cabs even smell better. But public transit? Well, it's run by the government. How do you expect it to run? You know what's going to happen. And public housing? Just about the same thing. Now, you could make a difference there. You could have the private sector build it, maybe even go in and help people to wend their way through the mortgage process, buy it for themselves, and they'll take better care of it. You recognize that voice. You recognize that style. But did you know that Edward Mahoney once anticipated that he would follow the family into the police business, otherwise known as Eddie Money? Mr. Money, welcome to the program. How are you?
Lars, I'm so glad you went national. Congratulations. It's been a big fan of you for years and years. And, that new song, it's called It's a Brand New Day. I'm putting a new record together, 10 really fantastic songs. And Waddy Wattel, the lead guitar player for Stevie Nicks, he just got off the road with Joe Walsh, and he plays in all the fabulous winos with Keith Richards. He's doing one guitar work on that record. But thanks so much for giving people a little glimpse of it. I really appreciate that.
You know, I got to tell you something. You make some great music, and you've done a lot of different things, and now you've got new music, a new album, and a new television show as well.
Well, the television show came off, but, you know, when Oprah asked you to do something, she's a very powerful woman in the business.
Yeah.
She wanted to do this thing, Where Are They Now? So we did Where Are They Now? And I quit drinking, you know, because, you know, I'm like, it's alcoholism runs in my family anyway. But during the show, one of my kids was having a fight with my daughter, and I went up to his room, and he had a half a bottle of vodka underneath his underneath his bed, and he was loaded. So I hit the ceiling and had a fit, and they had captured the whole thing on camera, and they're going, this is great TV. I said, what are you talking about? I'm so embarrassed. But the thing is that then Mark Cuban, the guy that runs the Dallas Mavericks, I met the guy in person. He had the courtesy to come down and have lunch with me and my wife and pay for the meal when I met him in Dallas. But it's his network, and the name of the show was called Real Money, and it's just about me and the kids. You know, they'd say the video killed the radio star. That's true, but the internet has killed the recording artist. I mean, nobody sells records anymore. Peaches Records and Tower Records and Zebra Records, all the big record stores are closed. They don't even put CD players in the cars anymore.
You've rolled with all these changes in the industry. Are all five kids going to be in this? Zach, Joe, Jesse, Dez, and Julian, all of them?
Well, you know what? My son, Zachary, plays bass, but he doesn't play in front of people. But he's he's a classic heavy metal Iron Maiden type of guitar player. He was really into that, you know, Blue Oyster Cult, Iron Maiden, all that really heavy stuff. And then my daughter, she's like Etta James, and she's very animated on stage, and she comes on the road and plays for me. And my son, Julian, he's a great drummer. He plays better for my son's band than he does for my band. I can't stand that, you know?
It's tough to get good help these days, isn't it?
No, but the kids are all in the band. You know, my wife is, she's like number one in the spin class, and she's like almost like a vegan. Although she eats is like, she eats a little bit of fish. How anybody can live on snow peas, coconuts, and almonds, and, you know, I can't believe it, but she looks great. She's, you know, we're getting along really good. She looks good on TV, and I really think the show's going to be a big hit because it's very real. I mean, you know, I got five kids. Nobody left. I left home when I was 19 and never looked back. I got the five kids. Everybody's still very happy here. They got milk in the refrigerator and a couple of pork sits up on the table. Why would they want to leave?
Here he is, Edward Joseph Mahoney, who came from a family of cops in Brooklyn and Long Island. So I want to know, when you made that decision, you were already in the academy, you were doing training, you were expecting to go NYPD, and then you tell your folks, or I don't know if you told your folks or they just found out, I'm leaving for California with the band I played with in high school. That's how it happened?
What happened is, you know, I was on the police department, and actually I was so stupid. I was starting to smoke pot way back then because the Beatles said it was cool. So I wrote a letter to my friends with the carbon paper. I had a lieutenant that didn't like me, and he read the carbon papers, and it said that I was smoking hash, and I was dating that girl and fooling around with that guy. Oh, the whole thing. But the thing is my father was a patrolman here, wanted to keep me out of the police department. But I just said to myself, I don't want to be, nothing against cops. I was raised and fed by a cop my whole life. I got relatives on the job, but I didn't want to be a cop with short hair, working around the clock. My grandfather was a grumpy cop. My father was a cop. My brother retired as a deputy inspector, and I got a couple of nephews on the jobs, but it just wasn't for me, you know?
So rock and roll was for you, and you've gone through your highs and lows. You actually, I read a while back the story of how you wrote Two Tickets to Paradise, because what, your girlfriend came from some fairly rich family, and they were always going to Bermuda or Hawaii, and where did you want to take her?
Well, the thing is that I had no money, and I know that a Greyhound bus ticket in those days was like $27, and I wanted to take her up to the California Redwoods, you know?
And you were in Oakland at the time, weren't you?
I was living in Oakland, and I didn't have any money. But to me, Two Tickets to Paradise was like a Greyhound bus ride up to the Redwoods. It would have been nice. But she ran off with the mayor's son. I wasn't good enough for her mother. You know how that is.
Now, do you think
she wanted a daughter? she wanted a daughter to marry a career man, you know? I don't know.
And you have a career, but you just didn't have quite that career at that time. But here he is, Eddie Money, multi-platinum rock superstar, now the star of the new show called Real Money. He's got a new album out as well. And do you think that trip to the Redwoods would have impressed the young lady who'd been to Bermuda and Hawaii with her family?
Well, you know, you're how it is when you're in college. You got that college sweetheart, you know, and that's what it's all about. She's the one that named me Eddie Money. My name is Mahoney. She said, take the A and the H out of Mahoney and call yourself Money. I said, well, I don't have any money. She said, it doesn't make any difference. Eddie Money sounds like a great name. So I said, all right, I'll give it a shot. It stuck. People really got into it, you know.
You know
now
that.
I call myself Freddie Food Stamps.
Now what do you call yourself? Freddie Food Stamps? No, what? What'd you say?
Well, that's what they used to call me in college. But now that I'm paying 57% money, all my money back in taxes. But you know what? It's still the greatest country in the world. But I do pay 57% every penny I make, I pay back in taxes. I've got 5 kids here, 5 cars in the driveway with cell phones, running out of milk every time I turn around. But I hope the TV show happens. It'll be a lot of fun. I recently changed my name to Owen.
Oh, as in?
As in Owen Money.
Owen Money to everybody, right?
Right.
I want to tell you something. You know, at the ripe old age of 69, an alcoholic who doesn't drink, a cop who never became the full cop that his family expected him to be, you've had a lot of success, haven't you?
You know, I've had a lot of success, and I've had a lot of fun. I've had a lot of girlfriends. I've had friends all over the country. I've been on the radio a lot. I went to Europe. I went to Japan. I went to Australia. You know, it was from a cop's family with 5 kids. I did okay. And Bill Graham was a great manager, and Columbia Records was great. You got to remember, back in the day, I was making $1,000 a minute for a 75-minute show. I'd take a Learjet. I'd open up the Fleetwood Mac and take a Learjet and open up the Stones. And one day, I'd be Kansas City in the afternoon and St. Louis at night. I should have saved the money. Who knew?
I want to tell you something, Mr. Money. You probably get Eddie Money. You probably get a lot of people who say, don't you remember me? I just want to mention this. I last interviewed you 40 years ago this year. At Autzen Stadium in Eugene.
Oh my God.
But I know you don't remember that. But all I'm going to say is that I expect that if we're going to have an interview every 40 years, that you're going to be available for the next interview 40 years from now. Can we make that date right now?
Wait a minute. I think I remember that interview.
No, you don't.
I do. Well, I want to ask you a question.
All right.
Was it raining?
You played a great show, and it was the first one at Autzen Stadium. Eddie Money, thank you very much. Congratulations on all your success. I haven't met your kids. I haven't talked to your kids, but it sounds like you've got good quality kids who have some skills. And if they're willing to go along with this reality TV, real money show, they've got to be good kids to do that for dear old dad. Congratulations on everything you've done. And you're still making great music, and we're glad for it.
You know, I remember the last show that they did up there in Oregon, and we played a show, and I looked down, and this really pretty young lady, she had tears coming out of her. She had tears rolling down her cheeks like a little girl who lost a puppy. And I was singing Two Tickets to Paradise. I couldn't really talk to her. And then when the guitar solo came around, I bent down. I said, hey, baby. She said, you're standing on my finger.
Congratulations on all your success, and thanks for taking a few minutes with us.
All right, don't forget, Access TV this Sunday night at 9:30, I think, at 6:30. I don't know when the hell it is.
You got it. Access TV, the show is called Real Money. He's got a brand new album out. He is Edward Joseph Mahoney, otherwise known as Eddie Money, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. I want to let you know there is a report of an active shooter at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. We'll get you details as they become available. That's all we know at this point, an active shooter situation at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. So what do you think of Eddie Money? I'm glad he was willing to come on the show live, but what a guy, 69 years old. A recovering alcoholic and still out producing music and now television and everything else. Let's go to Jason in Vancouver. Hey, Jason, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind today?
Oh, how you doing, Lars? And I just like to say that, like, in my opinion, these people marching from South America, combined with these DACA kids outside Congresswomen and men's house, screaming and demanding things. This is a perfect example of the United States immigration system right now. Thank God that we have Donald Trump in here to put the military on the border. These people are demanding what they want from our country. And the United States better wake up before the next thing they know they wake up would have nothing.
You're absolutely right. I mean, imagine where we would be. I've asked you to do this a few times over the last year and a half. Imagine where we'd be if Hillary Clinton was the president of this country right now, because I think she'd be inclined to say, well, we have to take these people in.
Oh, yeah, I'd be horrified to see what she would do. She'd send the welcome mat down there, I'm sure.
That's right.
The thing I would like to know is do you think that, can I believe that with like this announcement of these people coming, even before that, but especially with that, with the icing on the cake, he has the constitutional authority, whether it's through presidential order or how have you, to put the military on the border. I mean, I don't really see how the Democrats can fight him on that, can they?
I don't think they can. He is the commander-in-chief. That's number one, so he's in charge of the military. Officially, he can't go to war without a declaration of war by the Congress, although plenty of presidents, including Barack Obama and now Donald Trump, have made minor changes saying we will have troops in Syria, we won't have troops in Syria. I mean, Obama put troops in Syria, and there was no declaration of war, and yet we had people on the ground in Syria who were being shot at and who were shooting back. So, but in terms of putting the military on the border to safeguard the United States and the integrity of its border, that's not declaring war. I think the president can do that if he wants to. I don't think there's any limitation on him in doing that. The thing he would have to avoid is saying, I'm going to use the military for law enforcement, which is, you know, forbidden under posse comitatus, but he's not using them for law enforcement. He's safeguarding the border. And if the military is good at anything, it's, you know, you say we send them out to win wars, but then once you've taken some ground, you hold the ground. They're very good at that. Can they hold the ground of the United States against the advancing horde? And I know that people say, well, you're going to go out and shoot these people. You don't have to shoot them. What do you think the average person who's trying to cross that border on foot is going to do when, you know, they walk over a hill and off in the distance is an entire, you know, set of United States Marines, United States Army, you know, whether they put up some razor wire, whatever they happen to do. I think they're very good at keeping people out of places or into places.
And, well, I believe they could, for sure. I mean, if there's anything, yeah, I would like to see the look on their face and to come over the hill and see an Abrams tank there. But
I think it'd send a message.
Why could we not, in addition, while they're there, send the Army Corps of Engineers and go ahead and do some construction while you're out
there? I think they could probably do that, get the CBs down there and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, although I think the Corps of Engineers is more about building dams and such, but send the CBs out. By the way, the word we're getting from YouTube headquarters in California, the police are on scene. There are reports of a shooting. There were people seen leaving the building with their hands up. They said this does not appear to be some kind of drill, that people are leaving that building in a hurry. We'll get you details. Apparently, they have had 50 calls about gunshots, that from Fox News, in just the last few minutes. We'll get you details, and it looks as though we've got police going in with vests, and it looks like a SWAT team, also the ones in front carrying a shield of some kind. And I think they're probably going to go in and try and get to the threat, the person who's creating that threat, just as quickly as they can. It looks from the aerial shots as though police are entering the building. It's YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. The headquarters of the big company YouTube, and the police are arriving there now, and apparently people are being evacuated from that building. We'll get you details as they become available. Let me go to Peter in Redmond. Hey, Peter, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Lars, I wonder if anyone has considered, when they're building the wall along the border, the installation of solar panels. Our solar panels are now they're getting cheaper. They obviously would create jobs, And I'm sure the income from the sale of electricity that would be generated would at least pay for maintenance of the wall.
I don't think so. And, Peter, I'll be honest with you. Solar panels today do not pencil out. That is, for what you have to pay for them, for the space they have to occupy, for the maintenance that they require, and they do require some maintenance because they're not just hooked straight into the grid. They have to come through rectifiers and other things that clean up the power. I don't know of a single solar system out there where if you buy it for a price, assuming you're paying the price over 15 or 20 years, the life of the solar panels, where the electricity that comes out of them is affordable to sell. And here's the other problem. An awful lot of that border is not where people live. You know, people aren't living. I mean, there are small communities, and in some cases, McAllen and some other cities along there. But I don't think you'd be able to even make it pencil out to pay for the panels, let alone to pay for maintenance of the wall. One more update. Police are at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. There have been about 50 reports of shots fired at YouTube headquarters. People have been running out of the building, and we'll get you details as they become available. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Let me tell you what we know about what's going on in San Bruno, California, at the headquarters of the company YouTube. There were, within the last hour or so, reports of shots fired. There are workers inside, like a product manager named Vadim Lavrusik, who tweeted that there was an active shooter on campus. The 911 center in San Bruno, California, has received about 50 phone calls from people who say there is an active shooter on campus. People are leaving the buildings with their hands held up in the air. And the police have tweeted out in San Bruno, we have an active shooter situation, many police vehicles, please stay out of the area. We don't know anything more than that, whether anybody has been hurt, whether anybody has been killed. We just know reports, and these sound like credible reports as opposed to, we've had some incidents the last few weeks where people said we heard shots fired, and then at the end of the day, they find nothing. This one sounds more like a situation where there actually is somebody who's firing shots. And on that note, let's go to Rod in Olympia, listening on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hey, Rod, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks, Lars, for taking my call. God sure. Bless you and your work.
Thank you.
And it's, you know, of course, we got to pray for the innocent people who are victims, if there are victims today. But I just don't understand, Lars, how could something like this happen at what is presumably a gun-free zone on the YouTube campus? How could that happen? Can you explain that?
I know you've got your tongue firmly held in cheek on that one, because we all know that this is likely to be a gun-free campus, and you know that I think gun-free campuses or gun-free locations are some of the most dangerous places in America. Theaters that are that way, shopping malls that are officially gun-free zones. In California, where the rules on being able to carry concealed are extraordinarily tight, where the legislature is constantly trying to chip away against the Second Amendment, I know almost as sure as I'm standing here, not officially, but I have every reason to believe that this is a gun-free campus, which means that if somebody came on that campus intending to hurt people with a gun, he knew that he would likely find no resistance. In fact, you wonder whether big institutions like that even have armed guards on campus. And certainly if they were going to have a campus that was gun-free, the very least they should have is armed security on campus. Now, I know they say, but the police are only minutes away. That campus is a huge campus. Is it 1,100 or 11,000, guys? Is it 1,100 or 1,100. Okay, so 1,100 people on that campus. That's a good size set of buildings. And you're right.
The size of a high school.
Yeah, it's the size of, well, as a matter of fact, it's smaller than Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High in Parkland, Florida, where the shooting happened about almost just short of 2 months ago when the shooting happened there. That building held 3,000 students. It held several hundred teachers and several hundred other staff members, and that's the situation that they were in. So you're right. Gun-free zones are dangerous places to be, aren't they?
Yeah, well, clearly we clearly just don't have enough laws in place, and we need to draft some more legislation in order to stop people from going in and shooting up these gun-free zones.
See, it doesn't surprise me you're from Olympia, because think of all the Democrats in Olympia who think that passing one more law, or all the Democrats in Salem who say just one more piece of paper that we could put in the books and that would stop bad things like this from happening. I hope that everyone there is safe, just as you did as well. I hope that this ends with only the bad guy dead. It could be very, very bad, and I appreciate the call. Let's go to George in Seattle. Hey, George, you heard the president's suggestion. He said, we are going to put the military on the southern border of the United States to make sure that people do not come in illegally. What do you think of that idea?
I don't think Congress is going to let him. And you got to remember, this is a Republican-controlled Congress, and they gave $500 million to Planned Parenthood. They passed a Democrat spending omnibus bill. These guys, they do what Democrats tell them to do, and they're never Trump resistance.
I agree with you.
Ryan, that's Mitch McConnell. That's all of them. And they're going to stop Trump, and they're going to get these Mexicans in. They're going to get them vote Democrat.
I agree. I agree with your assessment of Congress. But tell me this. Legally, how can they stop the commander-in-chief from stationing military on the southern border? He's already got the Pentagon budget that was voted through and signed. So how do they stop him? Because I don't think they have the legal power to stop the commander-in-chief unless he decides to go to war, in which case they could say you need a formal declaration. But this isn't going to war. This is just putting troops on the border.
There's Trump's already been stopped by Democrat judges from overturning President Obama's executive orders already.
But that's
that, and so the law's a pretzel.
Well, you may be right, George. I think you're wrong, though. He's the commander in chief. He can move the military around as he chooses, unless, as I said, he decides to go to war, in which case he needs a declaration.
But there's going to be a Democrat judge who says, "No, you can't. No, you don't."
And on what basis, though?
By Bill Clinton or Obama.
On what basis, though? How would you stop the commander in chief?
They're lawless. They interpret the Constitution. They interpret the law any way they darn want to, and they get what they want.
You may be right. I'm more optimistic than you are, George. I think he's going to get this done.
I pray you're right.
Well, I think at this point I've tried to think it through and think: is there any legal mechanism? Could a judge say why we might affect the environment of the desert tortoise? Or the ciliated sand flea or something else. They might try a move like that, but I don't think so. By the way, the latest update from California, San Bruno, California, 50 phone calls from YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, which is apparently in the vicinity of SFO, the International Airport, that they have people coming out of the building. And in fact, the police at this point are searching people one by one as they come out with their hands up. They're searching them, patting them down, and then letting them go. There's a huge crowd of people who've left that building, and we're now waiting till we can find some additional details. Shots are reported to have been fired at the YouTube campus, and we'll get you details as they become available, and that's what we know at this point. Let's go to Matthew and Eugene listening on KPNW. Hey, Matthew, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
Most people don't understand with guns and these gun-free zones, you know, they say cops are only minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the fastest shooter can shoot 12 rounds on target with a reload in a revolver.
If you
do the math, that's about 240 rounds a minute with perfect reloads. Now, not everybody is a perfect reloader. They can pump out 100 rounds easily that with a six-shot revolver.
Matthew, you're right on the timing. What happens in a situation like this, let's say somebody is really on the ball. Shots are fired down the hall from where you're working. You're not hurt. You have access to a phone. The phone works. If it's a cell phone, it's not blocked by the walls you're working inside of. And you have the presence of mind to immediately identify those are shots being fired. I'm going to call the police. Let's say your call actually connects to 911 within, say, 90 seconds of the first shot being fired. 911 manages to dispatch within 1 minute. So now you're 2.5 minutes in. The nearest police units, let's say optimistically, they're 4 minutes away. So the first cars pull up 6.5 minutes after the shooting started, and the first officers do what officers are trained to do now, which is you know, enter quickly, go to the source of the shooting and find the threat and neutralize it. Now, you're entering a building that's big enough to hold 1,100 workers. How long is it going to take the first five police officers who arrive there, even with very good information from dispatch, from people calling from inside, describing, well, you go to building B and then you go to the third floor and then you, you know, go down the hall to build, you know, room number 500. How long is it going to take that cop at full tilt? Let's say he's a young man or young woman in very good shape and he is sprinting. How long is it going to be? Another 2 or 3 minutes before he gets to the location, assuming that the man who's firing the shots is not on the move at the same time.
Yeah, that's 7 or 8 minutes altogether there, then.
And that's all taking the optimistic view that everything works absolutely perfectly. How many shots has he fired 7 minutes in?
If he's perfect and has all the stuff, at least 800 rounds.
Well, he may have 100 rounds a minute. That's pretty quick, but say it was half of that. It's still an awful lot of potential damage and death and injury coming from somebody in the minimum time it might take for the police to get there. And the question is, I'd like to know, whether or not they even had security, and in this case, meaningful security, meaning armed security. There has been a shooting at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. 50 calls to 911, reports of shot fired on campus. The police have dispatched people. They are now evacuating folks from the building and searching them as they come out. No reports of any injuries, no reports of any deaths, but also no reports that the police have neutralized the shooter at this point, either reached him or taken him down or that he's taken his own life. We don't know that either. We'll get you details as they become available. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This is the small additional detail that we have from ABC7, which is one of the local network affiliates in the San Francisco area. They say the shooter has been described as a white female wearing a headscarf. But that is all we have at this point, and the attribution on that is the ABC affiliate in San Francisco, Channel 7. There is a shooting going on right now. Multiple 911 calls from the YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California, not far from SFO, the International Airport. No reports of injuries, no reports of deaths, but an active shooter situation. Police are on the scene. This has been going on now for a little over a half an hour. I don't have the actual exact start time for when they say the first shots were fired, but police are on the scene, and as details become available, we will get them to you. Let's go to Greg. Hey, Greg, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Lars. I was thinking the pat-down upon exiting a building, that would only work if there was some form of a GSR, you know, gunshot residue monitoring, whether a dog or a wand, because you could leave your weapon in any garbage can and flush your rubber gloves.
You could, and that's assuming you were just trying to get away like Nicholas Cruz did in Parkland, Florida, and he was successful in getting out. But at some point, I think the police, and you're right, if this is the bad guy, if one of the bad guys walks out pretending to be just part of the crowd, he's patted down, he doesn't have any weapons on him, and he simply leaves the campus. The thing is, I would assume, do you think that campus has a lot of cameras on it, and they will have pictures of everyone who is in the hallways and the public areas of that campus?
Yeah, this is true. I imagine they have pretty tight security on that campus.
Well, and here's the thing. I think the police do the right thing. They're doing the right thing now because they are concerned with getting people out of the way of possibly being hurt, which means you have to get them out of the building. So you couldn't hold them in place. Then you want to search them so you make sure that somebody with a weapon is not leaving that leaving the building. I would imagine, though, that the police are going to ask everybody there to stick around. Now, I don't know that they could legally say we would prevent you from leaving. Let's say you're just an ordinary run-of-the-mill employee who's walked out of that building at YouTube headquarters, and you say, I'm so shook, I want to call my husband or my wife and have that person or my friend and have them come by and pick me up and take me home. I need to sit in a nice, quiet place for a while. That could be the case, but I'll bet the police are saying, unless you really object to it, we want you to stay around so we can ask you what you saw. And at that point, I imagine the police are going to try to identify everyone who was in that building during the shooting, whether they were directly involved and saw something or not. But that's an interesting comment. Let's go to Bob in Bonnie Lake. YouTube headquarters, San Bruno, California. A shooting. One hospital locally is now reporting multiple patients from YouTube headquarters, but that does not mean anyone's been shot. It could be just injuries or people who are, you know, overstressed by what's going on. Bob, what's on your mind today?
Lars, thinking about military on the border.
Yeah.
Good friend of mine, a captain in Special Forces, was down there 2 years ago when Obama was president, was down for 6 months doing a training class, and during some of their practice patrols, they regularly ran into Mexican military entering the U.S. along with drug smugglers.
Wow.
Military was told to simply observe, do not engage. If fired upon, do not return fire. I am 100% for the military going down on our border and closing it off and saying, do not let anybody cross this border.
Including the Mexican military.
Including the Mexican military. Use whatever force is necessary to stop them.
I would agree with that, with this caveat. I think the way it'll work out, what do you suppose the Mexican military is going to do if they roll over a hill and see that the United States military is on the other side? Do you really think
they're going to think it's going to go like they usually do? They'll fire a couple shots and the military will back off. But if they return fire, I think they'll turn the other way.
I think our guys have the right to protect themselves if necessary, and Donald Trump will make sure that happens. They will. You notice how big a difference there's been in Afghanistan and other places now that the rules of engagement have changed under a new commander-in-chief? ISIS is now virtually gone, or at least severely diminished, whereas the former commander-in-chief, Hussein Obama, all he's talked about was containment. Like, we're going to contain the infection right here, but we're not going to go in and eliminate it. Donald Trump said, no, we are going to defeat these people, and it appears that we are well on the way there. But as far as I'm concerned, just the presence on the border. If you tell, say, either National Guard troops or regular Army troops or U.S. Marines, patrol up and down this border, the very fact that there are Humvees and helicopters and drones going up and down that border, that alone will be a major deterrent to anybody trying to cross. And can you imagine how much easier they could make the job for the Customs and Border Patrol agents? Okay. At YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California, reports of shots fired. No report. We do have reports from local hospitals that they have multiple patients. We do not know if anyone has been shot. We do not know if anybody has been killed. We'll get details in minutes right here. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. Glad to get to your phone calls and emails a bit later at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network. I'll give you an update on what's going on in California. In San Bruno, not far from San Francisco, the headquarters of YouTube, a building with 1,100 people in it, reports of an active shooter more than an hour ago. And the police are on the scene. They have not indicated that they have neutralized the threat at this point. There are reports from local hospitals that they have multiple victims coming in from this, but only one report from one local fast food employee who said he took care of a woman who had been shot in the leg and that he managed to get a tourniquet on her leg. We'll bring you details as they become available, but it's an evolving situation going on at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. I'm also glad to get your emails, talk@LarsLarson.com. And I've talked to you a lot about some of the unintended consequences of the legalization of marijuana now in a number of U.S. states. And I would expect that there will be other states who will follow the lead of Colorado and Washington and Oregon and other states where it's been legalized either for just medical use or for recreational use as well. But I've invited Matthew Brockmeyer on, who's the author of a critically acclaimed novel called Kind Nepenthe, to talk about how legal marijuana is doing a tremendous amount of damage in Northern California. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell me what's going on there and how are you involved in all of this?
Well, I'm just an observer. I'm like a historian that was living in Kentucky during the repeal of Prohibition and kind of watching a culture die. A lot of these people here have relied on the black market marijuana trade for decades, many decades, and the price has just completely dropped, and no one has any money.
Well, I would imagine the folks who are selling it legally have a few dollars, don't they?
I don't think that it's working out for them as they wanted it to. The price is the estimated amount of marijuana grown in California legally this year will be 4 million pounds.
4 million pounds?
The estimated amount that they will be able to get rid of legally is 2 million pounds. So there's a 2 million pound discrepancy between what they're growing and what they are going to be able to sell legally. And that, of course, will probably all go out in the black market and drop the price even further. So locally here, a lot of businesses are closing. People are moving away. I talked to the Chamber of Commerce, and they said that the businesses are terribly hit, like up to 70%.
Because on one hand, when you've allowed something to be legalized and say, go ahead and sell it, but the price will be set by the marketplace. Oh, and by the way, the state and localities will collect their share of taxes on every bit that's sold legally. That if it follows the marketplace, I've watched it in other states where it's been legalized. I don't happen to consume the stuff myself, but the price dropped like a rock when it was first legalized. I think it was close to $30 a gram, and then it has dropped to where it's just a few dollars a gram. And as a result, I think a lot of people who grow a drug that I'm not a big fan of might just lose their shirts as the price continues to drop. But of course, the black market is flourishing because they're shipping it out to other states where it's still illegal and the price is still high.
I don't think that the black market is flourishing here, not here locally, not that I'm able to see. Like I said, that's what a lot of the people here have relied on. And like I talked to a masseuse and she says no one can afford to get massages anymore. And because it's it's not a something you need like food or so 20 years ago, the price of marijuana a pound was $4,000 on the black market. 10 years ago, it was $2,000. 1 year ago, it was $1,000. And now it's down to less than $500.
A pound.
And you've got to remember that people are paying to get it processed upwards of $150 to get it trimmed up. So
at some point, you might actually find farmers who are putting more money into the crop than they get back from it. Now they'll join the ranks of all the other farmers in America who sometimes put a crop in the ground and can't get back what they put into it.
That's absolutely correct.
Boy, what do you think is going to happen then?
You know, I really don't know. We'll wait and see what happens, I guess. It's just an interesting cultural phenomenon.
Well, as a cultural phenomenon, what do you think? Let me stop for just a second. I want to interrupt. An update from YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. The shooting that has been going on, we're now told there may be two suspects, a male and a female. The female has been identified or described on ABC7, which is one of the local network television affiliates, described as a white female wearing a headscarf. There is now a male shooter who's possibly been identified. It may be that there are two people on that campus. Police are there, but there is no word at this point that police have neutralized the threat, although hundreds of people have been evacuated from that building. We know that at least some people have been taken to local hospitals with various kinds of injuries, including one, we're told, who was shot, but we don't know. There may be many more people who've been shot as well. We'll get you details as they become available. So, Matthew, you're the novelist. You're the guy who wrote Kind Nepenthe. So what do you think is going to happen in this kind of environment where the government has inserted itself and said, we're going to quickly legalize something, and they've caused a real, almost an economic bomb to be dropped on that marketplace?
Yes, that's what's happened. I hope that these little towns all over don't become ghost towns.
Well, the other concern I've got is that apparently in Northern California, where it's pretty dry much of the year, some of the marijuana farmers are not exactly going by the books when it comes to obtaining water, are they?
Well, no, but I mean, you see the same thing in the wine industry.
Well, are you seeing wine growers who go out and steal the water to irrigate their crops?
Huh. Not that I'm aware of, no.
Well, but see, I've actually read reports from various small towns in the drier parts of the West Coast where the police say that folks will go out with a 5,000-gallon water truck at night and fill it from local fire hydrants rather than buy it because they find that the cost of irrigation is higher than they're willing to pay, so they go out and steal the water instead. Cities allow people to tap into those fire hydrants, but for a fee, and apparently some of the folks who are growers have decided to do it without paying the fee.
That's correct. That has happened. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely, it has.
Tell me about Kind Nepenthe.
Well, it's a story of how the local people are dealing with this situation we're talking about. You have like hippie back to the landers who are hoping to make enough money to buy their own piece of land where they can have an organic farm. But their morals are compromised because they're growing with chemicals and pesticides. So they're actually going against their own morals trying to get this money up. And meanwhile, the market is collapsing, so they're getting increasingly desperate. And it's also a mix-up of all the different cultures we have here. Like, there's a lot of, like, rednecks, I guess you call them, you know, hillbillies, and these hippies, and then big pot growers. And sometimes that mix can get awful volatile.
Sounds like it. Well, actually, the rednecks are more like me. I like that kind of approach, but it sounds like when they get pushed between their morals on use of chemicals and fertilizers and putting food on the table, it sounds like I know which one comes first.
Right.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Matthew. Thank you very much. I appreciate the update, and good luck with the novel. It sounds like it's going to be an interesting Kind Nepenthe. Matthew Brockmeyer is author of this novel from Northern California, and Legal Pot. It's going to produce some interesting results here all over the country as various states decide to legalize it. And, of course, the black market is still going because in most of America it's illegal. And, boy, they are shipping it out literally by the hundreds of millions of dollars worth to parts of the country. It's still illegal. I want to give you an update on YouTube and the headquarters. 911 calls began a little over an hour ago. Apparently, at least some people have been shot at YouTube headquarters. This is a campus with 1,100 workers on it. There are now reports from local media that there are maybe two shooters who are on campus, a woman, a white woman wearing a white wearing a headscarf, and a male. But no description on the male at this point, and police have not indicated. Apparently, it happened during a party, a gathering that was going on at YouTube. It harkens back, that's from Fox News. Do you remember what was happening in San Bernardino just a couple of years ago? Tashfeen Malik and Syed Farouk went to a holiday party and began murdering people there. It does kind of remind you of that situation. We'll give you details as they become available. One YouTube worker reports seeing blood on the floor and blood on the stairs of the building as they were leaving. We'll get you details as they come. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, although we have to tell you, at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California, just outside San Francisco, a situation there, they say, is relatively secure. According to NBC News, a woman has been shot and is now dead. There is said to be possibly a second suspect in this shooting at the YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, reported to be a male. There are reports from local hospitals of multiple patients coming in to be cared for. We have a report. In fact, there was a young man. I wanted to play this for you. There's a young man who was talking to Fox News. He's a local fast food worker, and he said he assisted a woman who came in and needed some help.
He said the woman was out here in the parking lot, and she comes into Carl's Jr. where you're working, and what happens?
Okay, so I came out the bathroom, and she was already in the dining room, and people were taking care of her, and I was trying to find some tools to help her, and I found a bungee cord, and I tied that around her leg to stop the blood flow.
She was shot in the leg. Do you know which leg?
I think it was the left leg.
Low, like below the
part of the leg near the calf area.
Okay. Yeah. Was she crying? Was she screaming?
She was relaxed. She was not crying, no screaming. She was just, she was scared, of course, but not in shock.
All right. Now, that's a young man who helped assist one of the victims coming out of that shooting at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. We're told that the woman who was described as a suspect is now dead. We don't know if it's by her own hand or because of the police. We're told that there is a second suspect who is reported to be a man. And the city manager of San Bruno has talked to local media and said, listen, it's relatively secure. They're on a campus big enough for 1,100 workers at YouTube. And, of course, details as they come. To your calls now. Let's go to Tom in Springfield. Hey, Tom, thanks for listening on KPNW. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Good talking to you again. I appreciate you taking the call.
Thank you.
I'm a great believer in the KISS principle, and you were discussing the border protection and so forth earlier.
Yeah.
why not just drop American immigration law and institute Mexican immigration law? At that point, no illegals in this country would have any form of support whatsoever. They'd be instant felons, and they'd be flocking to the border.
Yeah, the only hang-up there is that the Congress would never pass anything like that, and they would have to do that. You can't just, you know, impose laws. I guess that was a hallmark of the previous administration, where Barack Obama thought he could pass laws without using the Congress and just impose his will, because he thought he was some kind of tyrant who could sign a piece of paper and make the laws change. He's wrong about it. But
Obama types all is still in there is the problem.
Well, that's right. And whenever they want to get something done, they seem to be able to skirt past all the rules. When they don't want something to happen, then it goes the other direction. They say, oh, no, it's impossible to do that. But you're right. Imagine if America had the same laws as Mexico. I've been down there a few times. I don't go there anymore. As far as I'm concerned, it's a dangerous place to go. Even if you're going to the more populated touristy areas, it's a dangerous place. People get kidnapped. People get killed. People get hurt. But in that country, I've been told that if you go down there as a young American citizen, you say, hey, I think I'll get a job here and I'll work here and stay here for a while. Not without a permit, not without the right government sign-offs. But in America, we have a free and easy system, unfortunately, that we could tighten up. The minute we said to American businesses, you must e-verify everyone who works for you. And if you decide to hire somebody and employ them and pay them wages, and you do not e-verify them, you cannot deduct their wages. That act has been proposed to the Congress for more than 15 years, and the Congress has never been willing to do it. And it directly works against the best interests of the American people. Let's go to Roy, who's calling in from Richland, Washington, listening on 610 KONA. How you doing, Roy? Welcome to the program.
Good. Good afternoon. So, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'm listening. What's up?
Okay. I was just driving along. So, anyways, talking about gun-free zones and what's happening with the YouTube campus, very sad situation. I just want to ask anybody out there, and your opinion also included, if a gun law were to be passed to put more restrictions, why do people think that restrictions are going to stop people from taking guns into a gun-free zone? It's just like any community USA saying no fireworks are allowed, but they're going to go to the Indian reservations and get the good fireworks and still bring them out there and shoot them off. People are going to do what they want to do, regardless if they are a gangbanger, a terrorist, or even, you know, someone that has some mental problems.
Roy, I'm going to actually give you a serious answer to that question, because I think it's a good question. When people ask me what's the difference between conservatives and liberals, the simple answer is conservatives think and liberals feel. So liberals tend to go toward solutions that feel good. You say, we have this problem. People are getting shot. Well, let's make a rule against people getting shot. And of course, we have those. And then when people still get shot, they feel that another law would do the trick. Conservatives tend to think about it and say, let's see, who do rules control? People who follow the rules. Who do rules by definition not control? Those people who don't follow the rules. So people who commit murder and assault do not follow the rules. So if you think that you're going to stop people from committing murder and assault by writing another rule, you have to start with the premise that you're going to get somebody who's already breaking a bunch of rules to follow the rule that's the latest rule that you've added to the list. It's nonsensical thinking, but it feels good because they can say, look, I passed a law. I mean, I give examples of this all the time. Do you know Kate Brown announced the other, the governor of Oregon, announced that she had tackled the opioid crisis because she'd signed a bill. Do you know what the bill called for? It called for someone to set up a committee to come up with a way of dealing with opioids. So in other words, she said, we've tackled it. Why? Because I told somebody to put a committee together and then have that committee sit down and figure out the answer. I mean, if your wife calls you from the kitchen and says, honey, the water pipe broke, the kitchen is flooding, and you walk out there and say, honey, I've called a bunch of my buddies. We're going to get together Friday night. We're going to talk about plumbing for a while. We'll come up with a solution. Versus, say, getting down there and turning the water supply off and getting the pipe actually fixed, you've come up with the feel-good solution. Liberals love feel-good solutions. What's going on in San Bruno, California at this hour? Police say that one woman has been shot. She is dead. She is believed to be one of possibly two suspects involved in a shooting at YouTube headquarters, the home to 1,100 workers in San Bruno, California. We don't know anything about motivation or identity of those people, but we will bring you details as they become available. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you with me live on the Radio Northwest Network. But when a big national event begins happening, we will always bring you the latest information. In San Bruno, California, police say that the situation is relatively stable. They are expecting to hold a news conference here fairly soon. We're told that the female shooter on the YouTube campus in San Bruno, California, not too far away from San Francisco, is dead at this point. There was a boyfriend who was described, and we will see if we can get some more information on this situation. We expect, in fact, let's jump now to San Bruno, California, and a live press conference.
At 12:46 p.m. this afternoon, San Bruno Police Department received numerous 911 calls regarding gunshots at the YouTube campus located on Cherry Avenue in our city. San Bruno Police arrived on scene at 12:48 and immediately began a search for a possible shooter or suspect. Upon arrival, officers encountered numerous employees fleeing from the building. It was very chaotic, as you can imagine. We did encounter one victim with an apparent gunshot wound towards the front of the business as we arrived. Several minutes later, while conducting a search of the premises, officers located a second individual with a gunshot wound that appears to may have been self-inflicted. We are still working on confirming that. Two additional victims were located several minutes later at an adjacent business. The extent of all of the injuries of our victims are unknown right now. They were all transported for emergency medical care, but they are all unknown. So if I miss that, we have four victims who have all been transported for gunshot-related injuries, and we have one subject who is deceased inside the building with a self-inflicted wound that at this time we believe to be the shooter, but we're still following up on that. Multiple law enforcement agencies have responded to assist. We're very grateful for everyone's help and assistance. We could not have responded and accomplished this without everybody's help. This is an active event and an active investigation, and numerous law enforcement personnel from numerous different local agencies are still conducting a search of the business just to make sure that that it is clear. We conducted a quick, immediate search of the premises when the first officers arrived as pursuant to our active shooter protocol. And after that search was concluded, now we're going through with a methodical, slow search just to make sure that we cover all the bases. That's all I have for you at this time.
This is Ed Barberini, who is the San Bruno police chief, giving an update on the shooting that began just about 2 hours ago at the YouTube campus in San Bruno. I think he's going to take a few questions.
No, I cannot confirm that. It's a female.
He was asked about whether or not there were two shooters. He couldn't confirm that.
My understanding is that they've been transported and they're being treated for injuries that are treatable. We're hoping for the best, obviously.
Are there more people inside the building, or?
My understanding is the building has been evacuated. There are people in the immediate area. We're obviously trying to contact a large amount of people to try to identify and gain some information from witnesses at the scene. So you can imagine it's a monumental task with the number of employees that work inside the building.
Chief, can you tell us about what weapon or weapon?
I'm sorry?
Can you tell us about what weapon or weapon?
I don't have that information. I'm sorry.
Do you have the sheriff? Who else is
that? I haven't taken inventory of all the agencies here. There are numerous agencies. We work well with our neighboring partners, and we're grateful that they're here, but there's a lot of them.
And do you have a gender?
Yeah, I want to clarify that we did locate a victim what we believe to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound. It's a female, but the investigation is still ongoing before we can put all the pieces together.
Is this person an ex-employee?
I don't have any information regarding that.
Are you looking for another shooter?
We are clearing the building and searching the building in a slow, methodical manner like we would do anyway. So we haven't eliminated that possibility, but we have no information to suggest that there's somebody else in there that we're looking for.
So this is Ed Barberini, the police chief in San Bruno.
Self-evacuated, as you can imagine. We've identified a group that we want to talk to, and we have staging areas where our detectives are reaching out to them and interviewing them. So we're trying to do as orderly as we can, but a lot of people, pretty hectic scenario. So it's a task.
Are there still people in that building that are with you too that are there now besides the ones that you've identified?
No, I believe my understanding is that the building has been evacuated, so they're all outside of that building.
Okay, how many people are you talking about here?
Several hundred, or a few hundred. I'm sorry, a few hundred. It was my understanding.
In what floor was she?
I don't know.
Was it boyfriend there? That's
what. Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea. I don't know the circumstances surrounding this.
And it was only one shooter.
I don't want to eliminate any possibility. I don't know any of that for sure. Like I said, this is still active. We're still investigating this as I'm speaking to you. So there's a lot of things that I just simply don't know right now.
Are you sure that the shot started in the courtyard?
I don't have that information.
All right. We're at that point in the news conference. This is Ed Barberini, the San Bruno police chief. Here's the lowdown. The shooting started almost exactly 2 hours ago. There is said to be one person who is the shooter. There were reports early on of perhaps a second person, a male. It appears that the woman who carried out this shooting that has sent four people to the hospital, according to the police chief, was a woman, that she died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And we don't know more than that, but that the shooting scene is now over, that we don't have anybody else that they believe is hiding in the building. Everybody who works there has been evacuated from the building. Detectives are going to be talking to some of those people. I would imagine detectives are going to focus on those people who actually witnessed what went on. So about 2 hours ago, this woman apparently approached a party that was going on, a gathering that was going on in this building at the workplace of YouTube. And she apparently carried out the shooting that sent four people to the hospital. She is now dead as a result of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And if you're wondering, yes, as far as we can tell, YouTube's campus is a gun-free zone. Again, I'll remind you, one of the most dangerous places in America to be in is a gun-free zone. Let's go to Matt in Port Orchard. Matt, thanks for listening on Talk Radio 570 KVI. What's on your mind today?
Well, Lars, thanks for taking my call. You just answered my first question about whether YouTube was a gun-free zone, and you said it very well, that those are the most dangerous places around. But I've got another question, since you've already answered that first one.
I'll do my best.
A couple of weeks ago, YouTube made some policy changes that had stricter regulations on videos containing firearms.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge pushback from the gun community.
Yep.
Do you think that policy, which, by the way, goes against their mission statement, which is to give everyone a voice.
Yep.
Do you think that policy has any relevance or any bearing to what happened today?
I don't. And let me tell you why. And again, you're operating on thin information, so am I. Knowing that, and I constantly get people saying, don't talk about this till all the details are in. Great. I'm not going to come on and say 6 weeks from now or 8 weeks from now or 2 years from now we're going to talk about this. Here's my thought. Those people who really care about the Second Amendment in this country are largely law-abiding citizens. Now, am I saying that people who own guns and believe in the Second Amendment never commit a crime? No, I'm not saying that. But I think that if I've never seen the stat, maybe I'll ask my friend John Lott if there is a statistic. If you were to take the gun-owning population in America and say, how law-abiding are they compared to the general public? I would say we're more law-abiding. I mean, a lot of us, when we choose to own firearms... go ahead. Sorry.
I was told by a police officer a couple of weeks ago, I got pulled over for speeding. I was going 65 in a 60-mile-an-hour zone.
Mm-hmm.
The police officer, he said, I told him that I had a concealed weapons permit and I had a pistol and wasn't planning on trying to use it.
Yeah.
You know, he told me, Lars, he said, you Second Amendment guys are always the most cooperative that I ever pull over in traffic stops. I thought that was interesting. So, I mean, you know, that goes to your point.
Well,
Second Amendment people in general are pretty good people.
Well, and think about this. If you decide that you like to own guns and enjoy your Second Amendment rights, it becomes very relevant for you to know a whole bunch of laws. It isn't just gun laws. It's domestic violence laws. It's other things where you can run afoul and maybe lose your rights. For people who don't care about the Second Amendment, they don't ever plan to own a gun or carry a gun or go to the gun range or anything like that, most of those things are not as relevant. By the way, I want to, and thank you for the call. Let me bring you this one update. The Daily Mail is reporting at this point the woman who carried out the shooting at a holiday, a gathering, a party, it's described, at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. She is reported to have shot her boyfriend to death. She was described as wearing a headscarf. She then apparently used the gun to shoot herself after she shot the boyfriend, according to the Daily Mail. What were you saying, Jordan? That
boyfriend is still alive.
Boyfriend is still alive. So yeah. She's shot him and then took her own life. And that is all we know at this point. In San Bruno, California, four people are said to have been taken to the hospital. They are victims of this shooting. The woman who carried out the shooting is dead at the scene. And we will bring you details as they become available. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Let's bring you up to date about what happened in San Bruno, California, at the headquarters of YouTube, starting about 2 hours and 10 minutes ago. A woman walked into the building. We don't know her identity. She walked into a gathering of some kind described as a party at YouTube headquarters where about 1,100 people work. She then opened fire. She apparently shot a man identified as her boyfriend. He is still alive, but in the hospital. She also wounded four people, a total of four people, and then she took her own life. Police were on the scene very quickly. They have cleared the building. People have been evacuated. The scene is static at this point. Do we know why the woman did it? No, we don't. Do we know, what else was involved in this? The fact that she focused on her boyfriend might hint at something, but we don't know for certain. We'll find out more as the afternoon goes on. After all, this incident only began about 2 hours and 10 minutes ago. Let's go to Martin in Port Angeles. Hey, Martin, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Lars? The refugee from the state of California, I found that the Second Amendment rights were always under pressure. You can't even own a 10/22 rifle. And yet, they seem to think that that's going to somehow prevent people from using firearms in an illegal manner. And I just find it absurd.
It doesn't make any sense, does it? Well, you're right. And yet, you're going to hear people, I'm sure, after this say, you see, we got to control these guns. California is one of the toughest gun control states in America. Now, obviously, the Second Amendment still operates there, so it's not, thank God, going to be like Paris or London. We will not have those kinds of controls. But if you want to name a state other than New York and Illinois where guns are more tightly controlled, it could only be California. Let's go to Chris in Pasco. Hey, Chris, thanks for listening on 610. A pleasure to have you listening on KONA. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was just calling in. I overheard this just briefly when you were talking about the shooting that took place in San Bernardino.
No.
That was the same city where that couple had the shooting, right?
That's correct. San Bernardino, a couple of years ago, was Tashfeen Malik and Syed Farouk, who went to a holiday gathering around Christmas time, walked into this gathering and began murdering people, and then they ran from the police and were eventually shot to death. I said it only when there was a description of a male and a female involved in this shooting. We now know that there was simply the single female who was shooting today, and that one of her targets was apparently a man identified as her boyfriend, who is still alive but in the hospital, wounded as a result. But the minute I heard two suspects, possibly one female, one male, it reminded me of San Bernardino.
Yeah, and I immediately thought, well, didn't they plan that around a party, too? So here we have another shooting that, well, it was planned around an office party. So obviously the bad guys, they know when to plan it. We're going to get all the people gathered up, and those that I don't like, they're going to get some.
Yeah, and that's a frightening prospect, isn't it, that people have decided now, some people have decided now, that the way that they resolve some kind of difference they have is by going in and murdering people. The fact that they use a weapon like this, instead of a knife, instead of acid, instead of many of the other weapons that have been used. I reminded people the other day that just last month, in the month of February, 2 months ago now, that London surpassed New York for murders. But in London, of course, fewer of the murders are committed with guns and more with knives. But do you think that matters to the victims? I don't think it matters at all to them.
Yeah. Well, appreciate your time, Lars.
Thanks very much. Thanks for listening on KONA in the Tri-Cities. This is the update that we have. The woman who walked into YouTube headquarters today about 2 hours and 15 minutes ago and began shooting people, apparently focusing first on her boyfriend, a man identified as her boyfriend, is now dead. She apparently died, according to police, of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. She had entered the YouTube headquarters in San Bruno, California. This is a place where about 1,100 people work on campus. The police responded quickly, but it sounds as though in these circumstances, the woman may have already taken her life by the time the police arrived. There were hundreds of people who fled from that building. They were searched as they came out. Many of them are still there waiting to be interviewed by detectives who want to find out what happened and why it happened. But it sounds as though the one person responsible for this shooting today is a young woman who walked into the building with a headscarf on and then took her own life after shooting four different people, including a man identified as her boyfriend. I'll be glad to get your emails at talk@LarsLarson.com. Glad to have you follow me on Twitter and answer our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. Visit our website when you get a chance, and it sounds like a little bit later on this week, we may even get our Alexa skill launched, and that means you'll be able to get this program on Alexa. And that'll be good as well. Glad to have you with me live on the Radio Northwest Network. It's the Lars Larson Show.